Rock and roll, starting another Build Your Legacy webinar podcast. So this has been fun. We've done a bunch of series on capital raising, build to rent. I'm not sure what else you guys want to talk about. We got Johnny D coming up here in a couple of weeks and Jorge Abreu. But today we got the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Roberts, who's got super high energy. As you guys will see, we're going to talk a little bit about crowdfunding, development. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. Chris, man, how the heck are you, brother? Thanks for joining us.
Ruben, I am spectacular. So grateful to be here, share with you guys. I know sometimes it can be a little scary out there in what we're seeing on the news and in real estate in general, but I am optimistic and I'm excited to share some insights as to some of the ways I found to raise money in this chaos and everything that we're kind of doing today. So love to do some Q&A after or breakout rooms or whatever. I'm here to share. So let's rock.
Heck yeah. All right. We're also going to talk about scaling a syndication company and team development. So Chris is a big mindset guy. We'll hang out there. And one of the things that we had previously chatted about is partnering with unlikely mentors. So actually going out to one of these different conferences and finding someone to work with. I'm actually going to Brad Sumrock's event. I'm not sure how private he will be with his community over there, but I will find out this weekend. So welcome everybody. Andy, any starting words here before we get cranking away?
Yeah, you know what? What I've been really impressed with listening to Chris, he's got the entrepreneurial mind. So he's probably had that from a very young age. I think we probably competed for lollipops, blow pops to sell at school. You know, I think that I had some inventory. He had some inventory. I remember it was something that was always kind of, you know, ruminating about what would be a new business. Would it make sense? So I'm really kind of curious to hear a lot about the entrepreneurial side as well.
Cool. So for anyone who doesn't know Chris, why don't you catch us up on a couple of things? As we spoke, I mean, we've been chatting a little bit, but when I had you on my podcast a couple years ago, we were chatting it up about a deal that you had partnered with in the real estate accelerator community, including some people like Flint Jameson, who's on the call here today. Can you tell us about some of the deals that you've done and how you've moved into before we go into crowdfunding and what you got cooking today? How you've moved into that space and how you got into syndication.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually it ties to something you mentioned earlier, which is like the partnering with unlikely mentors and finding unlikely mentors to discover pieces of yourself you never knew existed. And part of that journey as we get into multifamily in the beginning is, okay, do I do it on my own? Do I find partners? First things first, do I find a deal? Do I raise money? You know, do I build a system? What chicken or the egg? The sky's falling and it's just chaos, right? You go to these events and there's all these great people and everyone's got tons of energy, but oftentimes you find that no one really knows what they should be doing first, right? And that's hard to identify because we don't even know what our skill sets are, which is why I love this unlikely mentor concept, because oftentimes it takes someone else outside your circle of influence to identify those pieces of yourself you never knew existed to allow you to be successful, right? So it kind of ties together. So going back to some of our first deals, and you'll see soon, because I think May or June, the book comes out. We had a book, and this is not a shameless plug for the book, but it tells the whole story of the very first deal, which was crazy, right? I mean, I've shared some of this with people and they just cannot believe what we went through on this deal. That success of that deal was the result of good partnering, right? It started off with my COO, Paul, that I met at one of these conferences. And I just identified skills in him that he didn't know would be a major value to me as he did with me. He identified skills with me that he just didn't have. And he said, you know, I bet you we could get going a lot quicker together. And that happened a few months later as we both joined this mentor program and got to know each other. And we just decided to drop everything and jump in together. Now, the reason it's important, you mentioned Flint, Chris, I see a lot of people on here I know. What's great about a guy like Flint, and just as an example, is Flint was at one of these conferences and say, man, I want to get involved. I want to do some things, right? When he was first starting out. And I'm like, well, hey, Flint, you know, we got deals going on and you seem like the kind of guy that could add value, right? Because he was showing up, he was showing value. And we brought him in and we partnered up on some things, right? And then now Flint's off doing some other things, which is great. So I think it's really important that you're open to partnerships, but you also identify what it is that you're missing so that you can be open to the influence of those people that can really change your life forever.
That's good stuff. I told you guys he's got killer energy, right? So I think Flint and myself and a few other people, I'm not sure about on this particular call, we've been on the phone with Chris and he'll talk our ears off. And it's just crazy how abundant he is with his time. So it's really good stuff. All right. Awesome. So how did you move into crowdfunding. What are you up to today in addition to multifamily syndication, or are you even doing that right now? Have you gone full blown into development? What are you doing?
That's great. No, I appreciate it. We're doing a lot today, and I'll give you a quick summary, but it'll dovetail off of what I was saying earlier about Flint and partnering and things of that sort. Sorry, Flint, picking on you today. As we began to scale, right? Paul and I, COO, CEO, and others, right? I had director of investor relations, all these people. As I began to scale, it became more and more difficult to raise money, right? First deal was like $350,000 a piece. The next deal was like $1 million a piece and so on. And it grew. And now we can raise 17, 18 million a pop, right? Which was not easy to do. And we started about 4 years ago. How did we get there? We started adding more pieces to the puzzle, more systems, more infrastructure to grow that out. I'm often asked, well, how did you get from $2 million to like $17 million in such a short period of time? And the answer to that is I recognize that I didn't have the right systems in place to scale. So I had to step back. So for about 5 months, Paul and I built our systems out and made them more efficient, more robust, built out our marketing, built out our team, right? And that allowed us to scale our capital raising capabilities, right? Now, fast forward, we just launched several new development projects. These are big. These are anywhere from $80 to $120 million new development projects, with the exception of one that's like a $50 million project, jumping from the value add space. And when we did that, we knew we were going to need funds to give us flexibility, right? So we started a 506C fund and we started a crowdfunding fund on this company's platform. Okay. We had great success with that because we could go out to the public and advertise to non-accredited investors and be compliant with SEC and FINRA and all the things that terrify us when we get into the business that attorneys tell us to avoid, right? We used the company. And as we were raising, we realized, wow, this is a great vehicle for us to raise money and scale with the non-accredited side, because we had a lot of non-accredited investors. We all on this call, if we've ever had a deal sell, which I've had several of them sell, know you have a problem because the timing doesn't always work out. Where maybe you have an equity event of $3 to $5 to $7 million coming out of a deal. What do you do with it if you don't have a deal in the hopper? Well, that's what's great about crowdfunding and funds, is you can roll that money into that flexible fund and raise for up to 12 months, at least on the crowdfunding side, and give you maximum flexibility for when you are ready to deploy that capital, right? So we, in order for us to scale, we had to figure out how to raise more money. We needed more vehicles to raise money. Funds were one of them. Crowdfunding was another, and obviously adding more team members as well, right? In addition to refining our systems and processes. So today, we have about $600 million worth of new development projects in the hopper, breaking ground on the first one in May. We have our crowdfunding platform that I actually purchased as a result of the success I had with that company. CEO approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in buying it. I bought it, right? So now I have the ability to help other people do what I did on that platform, right? Fellow syndicators and such. And we obviously have our value add deals. I think we're going to be selling anywhere from 2 to 5 deals in the next 12 months that are in the hopper. And then I've got a book launching, TEDx talk I'm planning. I mean, there's a lot going on in my life right now, charity work, et cetera. So that's Chris, high level.
Yeah, let me ask you. So for a lot of people on this call, I think that they would love to have kind of a window into what that 5 months look like. So if we could go back a little bit and maybe talk more specifically as to what were those warts that you identified that you, or whatever those yeah, kind of ideas that came about, because I think if we could even go even a little bit more granular on it, I think everybody would appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a simple, you know, looking in the mirror and saying, okay, we're out here grinding with every lead. We're out here grinding with friends and family, and we're exhausting that pool, right? Because we know a lot of people, but you're getting to a point where, I mean, we had 3 deals back to back. We had to raise $18 million in like a year or something like that. And that was a lot for us at the time. And actually, we started raising that when we took that step back and we came back to the table. So the first things first was, how are we promoting? Are we promoting to the public, right? 506Bs are traditionally what we were doing, right? How do we build out funds? So we started researching that. Matter of fact, I reached out to Ruben and say, Ruben, you know, what are you doing in this space? And how do we, and we start brainstorming. That's why it's important to look at folks like, say, Ruben as an unlikely mentor, right? You don't have to pay him necessarily. You don't have to have this formal infrastructure. It's, hey, Ruben, I got a couple questions for you, man. I envy you. I appreciate what you're doing. Maybe you can help me. I can help you, right? And I do that for a lot of people as they do for me. We're all equals out here just trying to rock and roll. So it was identifying, are we going to advertise to the public? And if that was the case, we needed to figure out a legal vehicle to do that to protect ourselves. And that's where crowdfunding came in. We needed flexibility to have more time to raise because we knew we were going to have multiple deals coming. So we started a 506c fund as well. So we had two funds going, right? Accredited and non-accredited, which is great. In the crowdfunding, you can have accredited going there as well. And there's a bunch of nuances to that that I can explain later. So we identified the fund model we needed to adopt, which we had not before. We knew we had to hire somebody that can help us manage the investors because at the time we didn't have a director of investor relations. It was pretty much Paul and I running everything. So we hired her on and she really helped streamline the management process, including taking all the phone calls first and filtering them through to me, right? Some of them she qualified and locked them in and they invested. Many others wanted to have a follow-up call with me, right? Maybe they wanted to invest a little bit more than say, you know, $20,000, $30,000. They required a call with me, et cetera. So those are the first really important things we did. We identified funds. We started building them. We built out our infrastructure, better automations, right? Better phone call systems and call trees, better response times, and then hired a director of investor relations, which was an investment, right? That's the hard part when you're starting out is you don't have a lot of money to put into all of this. You're doing everything. You're wearing all the hats. But as you scale, I mean, right now we're at like 150 million in value add, soon to be about 700 million, including our developments, right? And that's in 4 years, 1,300 doors with another 1,000 doors in the hopper, along with owning the crowdfunding platform and 3 books and all kinds of other stuff. No way we could have done that in such a short period of time without a really good team of people. And feel free to deep dive into any of that, but that's what we did over those 5 months.
Yeah, one more question. So are you guys, so it's 4 years old, right? And a lot of people would say, mm-hmm. Wow, that's really fast to get to the level that you've achieved. But the financing is also difficult because when you're newer to the business, especially if you're going after larger equity checks, you got to make sure you have all of your I's dotted, T's crossed. So Maybe speak a little bit on that, the financing side, because I think that is a big problem that we're probably experiencing collectively as a group is now we've got loan to cost down at 65% and we've got to be able to find deals with maybe that middle chunk of equity so that the retail equity we're not raising is 30-40%, which is way too expensive to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot to that. I'm gonna try to keep it as short as possible because I can tend to really deep dive into these topics. They're great topics. Great question. The first thing is remember that you see yourself in a very specific way and the world sees you in a different way. Okay. And what I mean by that is it's really important to recognize that you having good credit, right? You having a little money in the bank, you having a W-2 job with a decent tax return, right? You having some good relationships, a little thought leadership, being smart about what you post on your personal social media pages, et cetera, bodes well for you in this place, in this space, okay? You're going to hear gurus say, you don't need any money. You need nothing. Just show up and grab a margarita and you're going to be a multimillionaire and financially free in like 2 months. And that's ridiculous, right? I can tell you, I am scrutinized by the SEC, FINRA, because of our crowdfunding, like every other day. They're digging into our emails. But outside of that, banks, lenders, partners are background checking you. They're digging into all that. And all of that is relevant because you might think, well, I did this little thing or, you know, I've only got a 500 credit score. And I'm not saying you can't do deals with that, but I'm saying you want to build a solid foundation because if they start scrutinizing you, it's going to be harder to get debt. And the last thing you want to be is pushed off a deal, right? Now, let's say you don't have perfect this, perfect that. That's okay too. But you better identify early on, i.e. unlikely mentors, somebody who can maybe be a sponsor for you that is a rock star. When I first started, I brought on a sponsor that was basically a KP/GP, gave them a nice chunk of the ownership. They mentored me along the way through the debt process because I didn't quite understand the commercial debt process at this scale. And they earned their place, right? They sort of mentored me, guided me, taught me a lot about the debt, and then helped me a little bit with bringing on the asset management team, et cetera. And they earned their keep. And they also helped with the net worth and liquidity, right, with the banks. That was very helpful. Now I can sign on a Fannie or Freddie loan because I was on that original loan with him. Right? So yeah, in order to get debt today, especially, they want to give you less leverage, which means you got to put more money down. They are scrutinizing backgrounds. They are digging into your net worth, your liquidity, your ability to pay. They are digging into your T12s off of previous deals. So remember that. If you say on your website, I've got 5,000 doors or whatever, a lot of people do that when they're basically like 2-3% GP on 4 deals, they say, I've got 4,000 doors. That's okay. That's fine. Technically you do. But remember that bank might ask you for those T12s. And if those deals are not performing, you better be prepared to explain why, because they're asking for things like that today, right? I don't want to scare you out of doing this. I'm encouraging you to do this, but I'm encouraging you to think about what you're doing before you're called to the carpet, right? Debt is getting a little tighter today. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks, Chris.
Cool.
Yeah. Right, so let's dive deep into fund creation. I'm curious, what was the investor responsivity to that? I mean, were they excited to invest into a fund that was going to diversify into multiple deals, or were they just like, blind pool fund? I don't know about that. I mean, I'm giving all my control away. I mean, what did you experience there? And then we'll dive into how do you begin to learn about launching your very first fund?
Yeah. So the answer to the question on how investors felt about it is, for us, there was a few questions, a few people that were uncertain about the flexibility or the timing. Our constraint was more development out of value add than it was a fund. We found that the fund was not an issue for us. We had a very good investor base. I think Paul just sent a newsletter out. We just finished raising about $17 million. We're going to raise about another million of accredited only. Our non-accredited crowdfunding is shut down now. Man, we had like 170 investors at an average of like 92,000 a piece, right? Not a bad raise for our new development. And those are the LP investors, not the private equity, not the bank debt that's coming in on those projects. Our challenge was explaining that we have shifted, even though we had one development that was about 2.5 years old, shifting the majority of our model to development and why we felt so comfortable in the space. And the way we did that was through some amazing videos, drone videos, explainer videos, a lot of very good content that walked people through the journey and through all the automations that made them very comfortable. We had people that literally advertised off Facebook that said, guys, I've been following you for 4 months. I saw one of your ads and I feel like I know you now. So I'm going to hop on a call with you and I'm ready to invest, literally, like without us even talking to them. And they invested $300,000. So you only do that if you have really good systems in place and really good marketing that explains most of it. Now, again, the hesitation was not funds. It was explaining development. And then as this environment started changing with interest rates, you're just constantly educating folks to put them at ease, because development is no different than mobile home park storage units value add. It's just a different segment of the market. It's different real estate. And of course, everything is somewhat cyclical, but we all know that real estate typically performs even through the last 20 recessions, right? So funds were not the issue. It was transitioning our investor base to development and then explaining the nuances of it taking a little bit more time. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the returns we were offering didn't help us. We had very good returns in that offering. And so people were really intrigued by that. And that drew a lot of attention to us. And then we can dive into just funds if you want, unless that didn't answer the question.
Well, it did answer the question. I'm very curious about what kind of marketing you put in place and what kind of videos you put together. Where did you place them? Did you just send them to your existing database? And then we'll jump into funds. So what? Tell me about videos that you use to educate people on the particulars of the development.
If you were to go, I have two companies now, right? Sterling Rhino Capital and Tycoon Invest. But if you were going to go to my main company, Sterling Rhino Capital, first of all, you would see the first video of me. And I think this is important because it costs time and energy to do this, right? But you'll see the first video that's very professionally produced. It's me on construction sites. It's me talking to investors. It's well done, right? That was time and energy. But you know, I've had a really good response from that video, right? It really tells the story of who we are when you first land there. Then it goes into two drone videos that are very professionally done of the first two development sites. Again, what story are you telling your investors? Think about this, guys. I don't care if you're taking 10,000 or a million. And we've had investors invest a million. Everyone is important, right? Everyone needs to be educated. Everyone needs to feel excited about what you're doing. And if they see like a video with you holding up your phone and you're like, hey, it's Bob, I'm building a $100 million project. And you know, you can see like taxis in the background and you're holding the kid in one arm and you got your dog running around. That's fine, but it's not easy to get someone to want to give you $1 million for your new development project if you have all that stuff going on. You need to get into a sound room, get a good background, be articulate, write the notes down and do that. That's the beginning. And if you go through our stuff, if you're just curious, and I always encourage people, we share, go look at our stuff. Let me copy some of it. I don't care. You're going to see the pitch deck. It's amazing. There's a lot of detail in there. There's a lot of videos. There's videos on the markets. Remember, guys, I started raising like in July of last year, and we're breaking ground on our first property like in a month and a half. So we had no problem raising capital because we were telling an amazing story that made sense to people. And we're very approachable, right? Anyone wants to call me anytime, they've got my cell phone. We have I don't know, over 400 investors now. Every one of them can reach out to me anytime, right? That's really important. So again, I hope that kind of clears it up.
Fire. I love that. Okay, cool. So what do we need to know? There's no like go-to place to find out about funds. You either have to talk to a bunch of lawyers or a bunch of fund managers, which is one of the things that I do on the show, right? To get people educated, talk to business fund architecture consultants, the guys that tell you whether or not it even makes sense to start a fund before you tell the lawyer that you want to start a fund, because the lawyer is never going to give you business advice. What do people need to know, and how can they educate themselves on fund creation?
Yeah. So a couple of things. Don't overthink the, I don't have a deal yet, right? Don't get caught up in like, well, how am I going to get people excited? You know, as we all know, the timing can be a challenge. It's like, you're trying to raise money and you don't have a deal yet. So what do you show them? But remember, if you have some experience, you've been partnered with a few people and you've done some deals, a little different if you've never done a deal, right? You might just have to give an example. But a fund is just that. There are a lot of people that just raise money and manage a little bit to earn their GP per the SEC and all of that, but they just raise money for other people's deals. Well, how do you do that? You have to have a sample, right? You have to have a fund that states, hey, these are the types of deals we invest in. These are the types of build to rent or development projects we work on. Here's an example of a previous project, blah, blah, blah. We're going to be investing in one of these in the next 6 months, right? Now, you can have a fund where you say, you got to get in and I start your clock at whatever time, or I won't take your money. I'll just put you on the list until I'm ready. The challenge with that is there's no commitment. So if you get all these commitments and you take their money 6 months later, they may not jump in. So what I encourage you to do is say, listen, here's what I'll do for you. I will get you in now. We plan on having the fund open for 6 months. It's going to be a $3 million fund. We're going to invest in value add. I'm just giving you an example. And we're going to start raising now. We're going to shut the fund down in 6 months. Granted, if you invest today, did you miss out on a little bit of interest for 3 months or something? Sure. But it's better than missing out on a 2x equity multiple or whatever you're offering, right? Yeah, totally. I trust you. I like you. I want to get in. So they get into the hopper. And at that point, basically, you're tracking how much money you're going to need to get into these other deals. Now, what's cool about a fund is you could take $1 million out of that fund and put it into one deal. You could take $2 million and do your own deal. As long as the flexibility is in the language to allow you to do what you need to do, you have a lot of options having a fund. You don't when you're doing a direct syndication and you're very limited on your time frame, right? I'll give you an example. We loved our crowdfunding option because we had up to 12 months to raise our money in that platform. And because of the language, we could do anything we wanted in that fund. We could actually do debt if we wanted to in that fund. We could do developments in that fund. We could jump on other deals as long as they were developments, because that was in our language, right? There was so much flexibility. You don't have that outside of a fund, right? You're very constrained by time. The other thing is, it doesn't cost a ton of money when you think about it, whether you're going directly to a lawyer just to do a 506C or you're coming to someone like us to launch a crowd fund. It's all relative. I think you could, well, another thing that's kind of cool about a fund is you could build in the cost, right? Like, let me just again, give you one example, because I just did it. We built a fund that was crowdfunding. And within that fund that we built on our own, we built in a fee structure within the fund that paid for at least half of what it was going to cost us to list on the platform, which absorbed a lot of the cost. So it wasn't like it was a lot of money out of your pocket, right? And then when you're ready to jump into a deal, you just negotiate some acquisition fee or whatever it may be. And then that makes you a little profit or helps you pay for the rest of the cost of the capital. There's so much to this, so many little nuances, but in general, funds are the way to go, in my opinion. Joe Fairless has said it multiple times on stage when I've seen him recently, and I agree with him. It gives you maximum flexibility. The question is, how are you going to set your marketing up to educate your investors and put them at ease to invest in your fund? And the answer to that is just previous pitch decks that you have, or maybe partnering with someone that's going to be doing a deal and you're using their information, if that makes sense.
Heck yeah. Okay, cool. Let's jump into crowdfunding. All right. So you mentioned that you just recently closed your crowdfund. Do you still feel that crowdfunding is a great opportunity for syndicators to use and implement to raise capital? Or is this something that you kind of tried and you're like, no, thank you. Or now you have a platform. Tell us your overall consensus thoughts on crowdfunding and your platform.
Yeah, full disclosure, right? I'm slightly biased because I own the company now, right? But the only reason I own the company is because I used it and loved it, right? You don't go buy a company from somebody unless there's something there, right? Now, I loved the whole fund model when I started it. It was great for me because it gave us flexibility and time, right? But it was a 506C with our scale. We had to have that, credit only. 506B wasn't going to work. So then the question was, where are we going to put our non-accrediteds? And I'm sure many of you on this call have non-accredited investors. And while you can raise in a 506B, if your average investor is investing $50,000, right? That's only like $1.7 million. You can't do a really big raise or really even a medium-sized syndication with that type of raise with non-accrediteds. And not only that, what about when you get out of a deal? Where are you going to put them? So I love the idea of crowdfunding because you set the limits at whatever you want. You could set it at $1,000. You could set it at $100,000. There's no accreditation verification in the crowdfunding because we are SEC and FINRA certified. We are an approved platform to list your deal to the public, which means you don't have to go through all that. So what I loved about it was when I listed, they managed everything for me, right? So when the investors were coming in, they were coming into something that looked like my offering. It duplicated or mimicked my 506C offering. It was just a separate button that said, other investors go here. And when they clicked that button, instead of going into the accredited button that took them to my portal, they went into this button that took them to the Tycoon Invest portal. And as far as they were concerned, they were in our deal. And then they simply went through, reviewed the legal documents, electronically signed and wired funds all within the Tycoon crowdfunding portal. And then when it's done or when requested, we would have rolling closes. So we'd ask them for 100,000, a million, whatever. And then they send over all the investors' contact information when it's done, along with the rest of the funds, and it's now closed. So then we just upload them to our CRM and we're managing them as though they were ours the entire time. But what was great, guys, is the crowdfunding platform manages the entire process from front to back. All you have to do is take the money and the investors when it's all done. And now they're in your circle of influence. You can advertise to them or whatever, because now they're in your system. Now they're approved. You've done everything compliant. And now they're an investor of yours, right? That's what I loved about it. And so for any person, I wish I would have seen this when I first started. And I know people say that sometimes when they come across something that was a lot of value to them. But I say this because the first, I'd say 4 or 5 deals we did were really tough, because we're wrangling all the non-accredits. We can't advertise to the public. We're building our thought leadership. And as you know, that takes time, right? So how do you build a base of non-accredited investors that eventually turn into accredited without a platform that allows you to just go out to the public and say, hey, I got this great build-to-rent concept. You ever heard about it? Hey, I've got this great mobile home park. Or hey, I got this great development fund. We were able to do that. And I'm gonna tell you this one last thing. This is the number one reason I think this crowdfunding was a lifesaver for us. We loved it. And why I bought it. I advertised on Facebook Live and I went out to everyone because per the SEC, we have to get it out there. Now you can't say, you have to be careful in your language, which we can help you with, right? But saying we have an offer that offers XYZ returns, blah, 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 and sending them to the portal, the Tycoon portal, is fine. We raised over $2.7 million just for the platform through our advertising efforts. We weren't even really advertising before. We were networking. We were bringing in our existing circle of influence. We were using referrals, right? And references. And so allowing us to advertise this great deal and use funnels and forms and tracking and then send them to a place that was compliant was a game changer for us. I hope that makes sense.
I think I might have missed something. So you're saying that I don't have to file any of the FINRA, any of the compliance docs. You handle all that. So we could essentially Ruben's new deal in wherever he wants to invest. I think he likes Las Vegas. He could basically create this PPM 506C, take it to you. You're going to do all the compliance stuff. And then Alex, my buddy in high school, who I used to sell blow pops to, he could put in $5,000 if he wanted to in this particular crowdsource platform, whatever amount we decided would be the amount. Am I hearing that? Yes. Correct?
Well, so let me clarify, because there's a little nuances to this. You mentioned an existing fund. A couple things. One, you could start today with us. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks. So if you said, you know what, Chris, I want to start a fund for crowdfunding. And we would build that for you, right? So we build this crowdfunding fund. And you can raise up to $5 million. And any individual non-accredited investor can invest up to, I think it's $124,000 now each, right? They can't go beyond that non-accredited. Accredited can invest anything they want. So here's what happens. you get the process started. That's easy. If you just wanted us to set up a fund for you, crowdfunding fund, done. That's pretty easy. We get rolling and you're live within 6 weeks or so. Okay. All we need from you is to pass the backgrounds with SEC, send us a pitch deck of some sort, and send us your business plan. And that's the gist of it, right? There's a lot more detail, but that's the gist of it. Now, if you said, I already have a 506c existing fund and I want a crowdfunding fund. Well, there's two things you could do. One, you could start crowdfunding and parallel alongside your 506c, as long as your offering allows that, right? Because in your 506c offering, if you have investors signing along, you'll probably want some language in that PPM that states that it allows you to either special purpose vehicle, right? Or dovetail, or bolt on, if you will, a crowdfunding platform. Now, remember, if everyone's getting the same returns, it doesn't really matter. You're raising 10 million, 15 million. What's the difference whether you do it crowdfunding or 506C? But you probably want a little language in there that says we can do this, just to protect yourself on the 506C side. Because remember, 506C is accredited only, right? Now, doesn't mean that you can't run them both parallel, right? And perhaps invest, use the crowdfunding platform as a limited partner investor on your overall structure of your deal. There's lots of cool things you can do. And I would tell you to consult your attorney, or if you get in on board with us and you're looking to do things like that, we can obviously put you in touch with our attorneys as well. But there are lots of options here to do what you're trying to do. Let's put it that way.
This is sick, sick content, dude. Let's dive deeper though. How about in those 5 months or in general, tell us about the scaling of your syndication team, bringing on employees, bringing on co-GPs. I mean, managing all of that gets pretty crazy as we're experiencing, you know, ourselves. Tell us a little bit about what you were able to do and figure out to make it easier to manage your organization as a scaling syndicator.
Yeah, I can only speak from my experience. And, and unfortunately, as much as we all give advice to each other, it's a little misleading, right? Because I can guarantee you most people on this call just don't have the capacity to put the hours in that I do. I know that because I know a lot. I know many of you and I talk to you and it's like, oh yeah, I've got a W-2 or I've got kids or I'm doing this or doing that. So the reality is, to be honest with you, I put in maddening hours when I first started. I mean, I'm talking 7 days a week, like 18, 19 hours a day. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I couldn't sleep because I was so in it, right? I also had a partner that exited corporate America very early on. I stayed in for a little while. He exited. So he came on full time, like gangbusters, right? Like 100 hours a week plus. And so that helped us because now you had two people that had a vested interest in growing this fast, putting all in at the same time. Then we made some money on our first few deals. We were fortunate to sell a deal in 18 months, huge returns, and a deal in 22 months, huge returns. That equity, because we were in a good financial position, allowed us to invest a lot more back into our company. So we paid the annual fee for the CRMs, for the Grasshopper, for, I mean, you name it. There's a dozen software platforms we use now for all of our stuff. We just kept investing. And today I do the same thing. I paid cash for Tycoon Invest. That's most people couldn't do that. Right? But I did it because I live below my means, I save my money, and I constantly invest in my businesses, right? That allows me to hire people when otherwise people would not want to do that. Why? And I've seen this, guys. I know a lot of syndicators. They're like, I got to get this acquisition fee. I need this money, right? That's a problem. I get it though. I get it. But that's a problem because if you need that money, you're living off that money. Well, you're not going to be able to invest in your business or your people, which means you're never going to be able to scale. So I encourage people, don't burn the boats. I know that's popular. Have somebody pay you as much as you can possibly get, as long as you possibly can, to work for them, and then figure out how to get more efficient with your time so you can put as much time into building this craft that is eventually going to make you free. That's what I did. And I exited corporate America with an easy six-figure passive cash flow. And I don't spend that money. I reinvested in the business, right? As much as I can, guys, don't get me wrong. I live, but a lot of my money goes into the company, right? I hope that answers the question because that's the most honest answer I could give you.
That's powerful stuff right there. Yeah. Obviously not everybody can do and follow yours or commit that time. I guess they can. I don't know how many people are, but that's, I can see how that would make a huge, huge difference. Not only you, I think this is actually the reason that Rise 48 was able to scale so hardcore, because they had like three guys and their wives all working like 100 hours a week simultaneously to grow that company. And obviously it created some amazing results. Anything else that we should hit here before we open it up for questions and answers?
Yeah, I would like to just hear. So you made a transition at some point, Chris, to development. And I'd like to kind of hear a little bit about why you did that and how you started educating your investors.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I may, real quick, I just want to touch on the closing of that. How do you scale? Guys, I don't want to discourage you because I've done some crazy things in my life. I've built and sold many businesses. I've been an entrepreneur for 25 years. You can do anything you put your mind to, but you're going to need the right people and you're going to need to sacrifice some things in your life. I just want to leave you with that because don't be discouraged of at our scale. Don't look at us and go, oh, I got to have $400 million. Who cares, right? Just get that one rock solid deal, do your investors right, and then start growing from there. And you can always reach out to me as well, but do not be discouraged. You don't have to scale that fast. You can do it one at a time, but you're going to have to sacrifice, right? So let's touch into the development. So the main way we, so first of all, I touched on this earlier. It starts with your credibility, okay? I was an entrepreneur. I had a story. I had written a book. I now have a bestseller. I have another one that's going to be a bestseller here pretty soon. Those are things I did on my own time because I enjoyed it and it built credibility. I didn't do it for that, but it did, right? The fact that I could say, oh yeah, I was a sales and marketing guy and we had a $30 million company at one point gave me credibility. So when I went to friends and family, say, I'm doing this real estate thing, they believed in me, just like they'll believe in you. But you have to have a story. You have to have a foundation, right? So when we said we're doing development, they simply said, why? Why development? Isn't that risky? That was the number one thing people said. And I said, well, you know, it's funny. Everything's risky. But if you're educated and you apply that knowledge and education properly, things don't seem so risky, right? If you look around, you see all these buildings. How did they get built? They got built by developers, right? All the buildings we buy were built by somebody, some developer most likely. And so did they think it was risky? Well, probably not as much as the person who doesn't understand development. So I simply reverse engineered the way people think about this stuff and said, well, what's so risky about it? Well, it takes a little bit more time. It's a little scarier. It's bigger, right? Going from $20 million value add to $100 million construction is a little intimidating for people. But, and he may not be popular, but I want to tell you something Trump said in a book once long ago. He said, what's the difference between buying the Sears Tower and buying a single family home? There is no difference. It's just, do you have the guts to do it? In other words, it's not technical, right? It's, can I take that leap of faith and put the people in place to make it happen? And that really stuck with me. Again, love him or hate him, that thing he said stuck with me. And I thought, yeah, why can't I do 100 unit apartments? Why do a duplex? Why not? You know what I'm saying? So it was really just educating people and having them be very comfortable with me. And part of that was building out our thought leadership so we could take them on a journey. And then when they got on the call with me, it was just me reiterating what we were doing and why. And I'm telling you guys, it was really amazing. Whether it was friends or family or out in the public, we had some very good success raising for these developments. It was awesome.
I have one question before we open it for Q&A. I'm curious about if you are still doing any multifamily or if you've just doubled down and made the core of your business all development and why.
Yeah, so I'm fluid. I didn't get where I am today by not being flexible and fluid and learning all the time, right? I'm open to everything. I want to do what's best for my investors. If that means I'm in Bitcoin, which is probably not the best place to be today, they're going to know it and we're going to be in it, right? If it's multifamily value add or it's car washes, like my friend Dan Hanford has all kinds of stuff he diversifies into. And when you talk to him, it's like, hey, you got to change. You got to shift. There's good opportunities. I agree with that 100%. So I'm in development now. We have a development project that's about 50% occupied. It's about a $90 million project in Stamford, Connecticut. That was the first one we did, about 2.5 years old. We love it. Now, that's not to say that when interest rates get a little more under control and deals start coming down a little bit, because right now they're still way inflated, we won't do a nice value add deal. But I got to be honest with you, a lot of the value add deals we did were very challenging, right? There were some sleepless nights there, right? And the development is just a little sexier. It's a little more fun. It's luxury. It's infinity pools and Zen gardens and shared vehicles and fun stuff, right? Versus, you know, I got tenants fighting and screaming out in the parking lot. I mean, no offense, they do it luxury apartments too, but value add can be a challenge. So yeah, I'm flexible.
Phenomenal. All right, rock and roll with that. We're going to wrap it up here. So thank you so much, Chris. It's been a blast, dude. I got to invite you back so we can have a one-on-one conversation on the podcast and get into some other crazy topics of interest. But with that, thank you, everybody, for coming on. The replay should be available in probably about 48 hours or less. That'll be my guarantee to you guys. And with that, we'll see you on the next one. Thanks again.
Legacy Acquisitions.